Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are getting into quite an interesting space. It's something that we've touched on, numerous occasions on this platform, and that is the blockchain and some of the, applications that people are coming up with, when it comes to the blockchain. We've had discussions around cryptocurrencies, NFTs, smart contracts, all types of things on this platform. But for today, we are looking at, the issue of how do you tokenize, or how do you create a, I'm going to call it a stock exchange, but for small businesses using, the blockchain and all of the technologies that are there. And that, brings us to a local company called Reality Company that is tackling this problem, and we're going to be trying to understand how they've gone about this and why they've decided that this is the problem that they want to tackle. So we are joined by Edward Cottrell, who is founder and CEO of Reality Company. Edward, greetings to you today.
Madiwe, thanks so much. Thanks for having us on board and letting us explain a little bit more about Reality. Yeah.
I think maybe one of the things I'm curious about is, before we begin, do people call you Edward? Is it Ed? Is it like, how do they...
it's a variety. Everyone's got a little bit of something. So Eddie goes down pretty well, eh?
All right. No, excellent. So we're going to be talking to Eddie, and I think a good place for us to start is understanding. You know, when we talk about anything to do with the blockchain, you almost know that there is a big explanation that's about to come your way. So I think let's get that part, of the discussion, done on this part. Reality Company, what are you guys about?
So I think, Modiwa, if I just explain kind of why before we even get into the how. The why was very simple. So worked for a firm for many years, decided I wanted to go on my own, and had a great opportunity. I needed to raise north of 25 million, quite a big chunk of change, and that wasn't easily accessible. So it wasn't something I could easily gain access to. It wasn't like doors were flying open for me. And I learned very quickly that being an entrepreneur not just had personal and financial implications, it also had career implications. So if you didn't get it right, you lose everything pretty much. And so after going through that journey and successfully being able to establish our businesses and gaining traction, I started realizing that that the crypto space had big access to capital, billions, trillion-dollar industry. And so what we thought is, how do we leverage that industry? How do we take that money from resting in just in pure ideas of technology and the idea of what it could be, and how do we translate that back into fiat currencies, and how do we create something that allows people access to that market? And I think it's important to understand that that market makes up more than 65% of that market is retail. And in most listed environments today, that's 80% of it comprises of wholesale. So there's a huge divide between this retail and wholesale market. So we went down a journey, and we started trying to understand how to structure something like this. How do you take, firstly, how do you use that technology, the blockchain technology, which is, for all intents and purposes, all blockchain is a ledger, just managing and governing what transactions happen and when they happen. So it's not like it's a vastly complex technology. It's an incredible technology, and it has lots of use cases. So what we did is we went through a journey. We traveled through different jurisdictions to find out which would be the best jurisdiction to establish a company like this. And so we went through quite a big journey in understanding the legalities behind it. And so ultimately we figured out a way to tokenize equity, right? And to do it in such a way that it was genuine and legitimate. And so that was our first big hurdle, is how do we tokenize equity that gives you the same entitlements and rights, the same leverage, and the same voting rights that you would get if you owned a share certificate in a company. And that was the first big hurdle that we had to get over, understand the technology, understand like I said, the process to make something like that happen. And once we had that, we realized that we were able to take it to the next stage, which is start tokenizing businesses outside of just reality, you know, create tokenized equity for different businesses around the world and have those businesses trade in an environment that we create, what we call the block exchange, where these companies are actually trading. So it's in the crypto space, but we're more traditional than we sound. We are a very traditional company. We have registered entities. These entities are governed by the Financial Services Authority in the Isle of Man. They are regulated. So it's not like we live in, it's not like we're in this kind of decentralized space floating around. We have a governance behind it, and we have a board of directors behind it. We have real people. We have, you know, real advisors that sit there and tell us how we can do things, what we're allowed to do. So to summarize what we do is our whole focus was to tokenize equity of companies that wanted to list in our environment. By doing that, we open up an entire world for these entrepreneurs, you know, an entire world that never existed before, where you can tokenize your equity and you can sell it through multiple jurisdictions, through one platform, through different time zones. You trade 24 hours a day. So you've got access to a global market, capital market, that we just don't have access today for real companies, real businesses. And I think that's very important just to emphasize, is that any company that lists in our environment, it's a real company. It's not an idea of creating something that doesn't exist. It's a registered entity. It needs to be governed. It has to be regulated. It's not, our regulators would have a heart attack if we did it any other way. So I don't know if that explains it, or if I can get into, I mean, I could sit here for an hour explaining it.
I think what you call this, the general idea, I think it's there, basically taking the idea of a traditional stock exchange and making it more accessible for, you know, smaller businesses that would normally not meet the requirements of a normal stock exchange, but also taking, tokenizing the idea of public ownership, you know, in a company. And at least that's the way, you know, I'm understanding it on my end.
I see. That's exactly what we've done.
Yeah, so he's nodding his head. He's saying I'm right. So, okay, that means, he's explained well. I've understood well. So we're on the same, we're on the same page. I think one of the things that then, you know, some people might need to understand then is, in the same way that you have a bidding process on a traditional exchange, in the tokenized environment, like what you said, because I'm asking this question off of you saying that, you know, you guys are actually more traditional than what people would expect. So is there that bidding up process, you know, that we see, bidding up and down process that we see on a traditional exchange for equity? How does that work? Because obviously,
it would work exactly the same way. You know, it's what people think the business is worth and what the business is worth are generally not always the same thing. And people sometimes speculatively invest into businesses, looking into the future, saying what will it be worth, you know, and nothing would be different here. I think the only thing that would really be different would be the fact that it's an entrepreneurial business led by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. It's an ecosystem. It's a collective ecosystem of bringing people together. We're more like a massive networking environment to bring like-minded people together, capitalists and investors. To bring these people and join them together and have access to different markets and different environments. And so as far as what the environment would be like, you would have to report your financials every quarter, same, nothing different from a traditional environment. It would be scrutinizing of those reported financials by a team. We've got quite a large team, most of which is based in the Isle of Man. And so it's not like it's going to be any difference in that regard. The only difference is far less bureaucracy, far less listing requirements. And not only that, our strategy is quite simple: to give a business a grading and allow the market to decide if that business is a business they want to be involved in. So it's a far less complex environment. For me, a lot of the listing environments around the world have become incredibly complex. And it's not something that Joe Soap, the everyday person getting into this environment, really understands completely. By the time they hear the news, it's too late. It's, you know, the big guys have already sold and they're jumping in now and they lose money. And, you know, there's global stats that you can go to the FCA, the FSA, different regulatory authority bodies and get the stats directly off the website. More than 80% of retail investors lose money because they buy the news. So they're chasing that news and they don't actually have a connection to the business, which is a problem. So our environment, we encourage a connection. If you believe in the project, if you believe in the idea and it's something that makes sense to you, invest in that. We'll give you a grading. We'll only have two options available to list. You have a direct listing or you have an IPO listing or what we'll just call a VC listing because IPO has a whole bunch of stigmas attached to it. And you have a rating. It'll be a VC. It's a startup. We'll disclose the risks to the investors. They must understand they're investing into something where potentially they could lose every cent. They must be ready for that. But however, if the project succeeds, they get the commercial upside. And then we'll have an A, B, or C, or D rating on different companies that will, you know, depend on jurisdiction that the business is listed within. And the quality of the business, the ability of the business, the commercials of the business. So that's really our ethos behind it, is simplifying a stock exchange and using blockchain technology to leverage an international global market that doesn't have a closing time or an opening time, that's multi-jurisdictional. And so for Africa especially, I mean, you look at funding in Africa currently, it's a nightmare. There's some great projects, and I have a lot of projects on my table currently, that they have such great ideas and concepts, but to execute those ideas, they need capital, and they need proper amounts of capital. They can't be underfunded, because ultimately the project will fail anyway. And so the problem is that there isn't access for most of these VCs, ideas and these concepts that are coming through the pipeline. And I mean, with this South Africa going through this grey listing process now, we're going to struggle even further to get funding for startups and for new companies. Mm.
So with that in mind, then taking things a little bit forward, because now that we understand, you know, what the concept is, we've sort of gone a bit into the weeds about the blockchain and stock exchange and equity markets, you know, the issues that people are having in terms of raising funds in South Africa versus and the rest of the continent, etc. You guys recently launched, from my understanding. Is it, in terms of the launch, right, is it a launch in South Africa? Is it a launch internationally? That's the first thing. And then secondly, tied to that is, since launch, you did say that there's real businesses that are listed here. You know, how is the performance so far? You know, how have you guys been doing since that launch?
Yeah, so I think it's just important to understand we got the idea last year in November. So it wasn't very long ago. I genuinely have an incredible team and incredible amount of people around us. And so we hit this thing hard and I traveled to all the different jurisdictions that we were interested in. We eventually obviously landed in the Isle of Man. They're a AAA economy and they're an incredibly respected, globally respected regulatory environment. So the jurisdiction is very well regulated. We knew we had to be, because we're crypto, because we carry a stigma with us, because, you know, I mean, I'm sure you touch on FTX, you could touch on any of these big names crumbling. The problem with crypto is it carries a stigma off the bat immediately. So we knew we had to be well regulated and we knew we had to be compliant to a point where investors would have some sort of confidence in the fact that the business is correctly run. So that's the first thing. It took us a long time with the regulators to get them over the line. We had to put a lot of agreements in place to protect investors. Okay. And so ultimately it's just to understand the structure of how it works. We went live on the 17th of October. We were ready to go live before then. Our technology, most of it had already been developed, but we needed to make sure that the regulators were comfortable. So we went through a long process with the regulators. Okay. So how it works currently is, we take So if you put 100%, so let's say you put £1 into reality, okay, we take 95% of that your capital, your investment, and we invest that with a fund manager, okay? So we invest that with, for example, our initial investors, Canaccord Genuity, based on the Isle of Man. And so we take 95% of the funds and we transfer that over to them and they invest it, okay? Reality actually only has access. So Reality Holdings is based in the Isle of Man. We've got Reality Holdings. Underneath that, we have Reality Investments. Reality Holdings has 2 billion issued shares inside of it, okay? And we have 2 billion issued tokens. The tokens are released on tranches and the shares are released on tranches. So there's 12 tranches at like 2.8 million shares available and there's 2.8 million tokens available. So there's this direct connection between the equity and the token. So just to recap, we take 95% of the funds, we invest them in a very conservative portfolio. And the reason we do that is so that we don't go through what a lot of the bigger guys have gone through, where they're using these fractional reserve kind of calculations of what they think they need. We say, let's go with like a proof of reserve. So let's prove to the public where we take their money, what we do with their money, and let's mitigate the risk of losing 100% of your money. Let's create a baseline value to the business where we're only investing 5% into Reality's development, into the additional regulatory requirements, into the tech, into the running of the business. So commercially, that's how the business is structured. And that's very transparent. Anyone can ask us, we will happily disclose any of that information because we've got nothing to hide, right? So we launched, we raised a couple million again, additionally, on launch, and that was great. We've slowly been gaining momentum again. The business is in a nice position. And it was well funded from the beginning, and that's quite important. We raised all the funding we needed in 2 days in December with a group of like-minded entrepreneurs. So we never went to any big VC firms. We didn't try and go rally funds from anyone that would be against our ethos. We literally went to reputable, well-known entrepreneurs and we raised the capital that way. And so that was very important to us so we could maintain the integrity of our idea. And so, yeah, so things have been going well. Could they go better? Of course they could. I would love it. I would love nothing more than to be shooting the lights out, but we're definitely not shooting the lights out. We're doing well and we'll continue to grow and we're in a good financial position. So that's I think for a startup, that's as good as it gets.
All right. And it sounds like there's a lot going on already, like you said, being able to raise the funds that you did at the time that you did, but now, the business being in a good position. How many companies have listed so far?
No, so we've just listed ourselves. So all we're doing is proving ourselves. So we're just saying to the world, guys, this is what we're able to do. We're proving to our regulators that we're doing what we're saying. So we have to report to them all the time and say, yes, total number of tokens sold, total number of shares issued, capital in, capital out. So we're still in that initial phase of our business. And we're not going to rush a listing. We do have businesses currently. I had a meeting last week with a great idea, incredible idea. And the guy needs about $1 million to get the business off the ground. And he's like, please, can we list it? And I'm saying it doesn't make sense to rush things when all we could do potentially is hurt that guy's idea or hurt the business or hurt our own business. So we've got a strategy. We've got a timeline. We're very focused on our timeline. We're very focused on our strategy. And we'll keep to that track. And we've been able to achieve that for the most part.
When I'm thinking about something like that, then how long does this initial phase actually last for?
So we gave ourselves 6 months, this initial phase, just to get everything in line, make sure that we're comfortable with our position and make sure that we're comfortable with where we're going with the business.
And then after the 6 months, that's when, you start getting outside companies to also then come in and, start listening to the exchange. So in terms of, one of the big things that tends to affect companies on traditional exchanges is liquidity, right? People are actually buying and exchanging, shares in a company. And I can imagine that since you guys have listed yourselves, how have you been driving that liquidity in terms of people actually, trading your shares in whatever tranches that have been made available?
So look, at this stage, if you want to trade the shares, you can go into any one of the exchange portals like Uniswap, and you can trade it with a third party. And so it has very little effect on our liquidity environment. Our capital in is invested. The capital sits there. It's secure. And so that's how we've launched our initial stage. I suppose similar to the way a big IPO would list in the US, the pre-sale of IPO would be locked away for 36 months or something like that. We haven't done anything like that, but we've created different portals or environments for people to trade outside of coming back to us to trade.
You think about the shortcomings of traditional markets and you're just wondering if some of those problems will sort of just inherently affect you guys, or whether the fact that you guys have taken a blockchain approach then insulates you guys from some of these things. I'm thinking, for example, that you have a company like what you said just now. They want to raise $1 million. Let's say they decide that we're going to put 50% of our company on the exchange. That 50% becomes a free float. They raise $1 million. From that point of view, now you have $1 million worth of shares now trading hands, out there in the public market. For all we know, people start bidding it up, the traditional thing. It's going up, it's going up, it's going up. Maybe after a year, that same company is now worth, let's say, $10 million, right? But the shares that are being, traded and swapped, that money is it's ring-fenced away from the company, right? Because it's money that it's equity that's exchanging hands in the public market. But I always wondered that if you are in a tokenized environment, I'm thinking kind of NFT-ish in my head to say, is there a possibility that, because usually companies benefit from share price increases because it puts your market cap up. That's the main way they benefit. But if you're a small business, your business might be valued very high, right? But you might still have challenges with liquidity, right? Just simple liquidity, even just working capital, not even anything crazy. So I always wondered that, is there an opportunity in a blockchain type of an environment where, yes, the money is still trading in the public, but for each token that is, bought, each time a token exchanges hands, perhaps a cut of that, a small cut of that, who knows, 150 basis points or something, goes to, goes to the company, so that they are also benefiting from any, value accretion that's happening on that side. It's just one of those thoughts.
I get what you're saying, and I think the beauty of blockchain is that it's incredibly versatile. And I mean, this is why JP Morgan just did their first big transaction this week, I think it was, that they did their first transaction on the blockchain because they're seeing the benefit of it. So there are so many mechanisms that you can add into this environment, and there's so many points that you could leverage where you're able to charge a fee. You're able to, especially if they're trading in your environment, you're able to charge fees. And you have this ability to be quick and efficient and also be creative, that you would never have that same level of creativity if you were listed on a traditional exchange. Okay. And I don't pretend to know exactly what every idea that in every business we're going to list is going to look like. And that's half the excitement for me, is that we want creative ideas. We want people to come in with incredible concepts, and we want to develop those concepts for them. And so this is why we're not traditional. And I've seen a whole bunch of big listed guys recently, like last week, I think it was, big crypto companies going out and say, look, we think of buying out an entire stock exchange, and then we're going to kind of use this token. So we came up with the idea first. They busy trying to come up with a different idea, and they say, we'll go buy an exchange. And for me, that doesn't work. You're either going to reinvent the wheel, and you're going to create something incredible, and you're going to fix the problems of the past, and you're going to be inventive outside of the confounds of what's already been established, and change things for the better, or you're just going to go buy an existing exchange, throw some blockchain technology at it and say, hey, we've done it. But what's changed? There's no difference. You know, for me personally, this is really about the connection between this huge, almost like unbelievably passionate market of retail investors and entrepreneurs. And then bringing these two parties together to create this bridge between capital raising and investment into a business, and also buy into the business. And I often use this analogy. Imagine you launch a business, right? And you get 100,000 investors that come into your business and they fund your business. Because remember, a retail investor can bring R1,000, they can bring $10, they can bring €2. There's no limitation. You know, you could put $1 million in. So because of how efficient blockchain is and because of the affordability of blockchain, people can invest small amounts of capital, big amounts of capital instantly. And so imagine you had 100,000 investors that hit your business and they love your business and they buy into your business. You now have 100,000 in clients. I mean, you have now 100,000 users of your product. So you've got a community of people that massive companies are paying millions and tens of millions of dollars to build that community, to build that audience, to build that database of people that like their products. You now go to a market and the very people buying your product or investing in your product are the very people buying your product. You know, and that's only possible with retail investors. It's not possible in a wholesale environment. It's not possible in a traditionally listed environment. And so, you know, just to get back to your question, we're able to adapt and we're able to develop. I have an incredible development team and they forever coming up with new ideas. And they're always saying, why don't we do this? Why don't we change this? I don't think that day goes past where we don't have a new deployment in our environment. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of what my team have done.
Sounds like, there's a lot of opportunity, at least from a flexibility point of view, for you guys to use the next 6 months to actually, you know, fine tune things before, some of the outside companies actually start to come, and list there. And also, you know, just, you know, all the thoughts around, you know, how blockchain can actually help you, to optimize and make certain things way more efficient than they would normally be in a normal sense. So as we are rounding up, Edward, big issue is how are you guys thinking around, because once again, traditional exchanges, they have listing requirements, sizes, thresholds, all of that. You said earlier on that these are going to be real businesses. Is there a stage at which, you know, most people use revenue as a threshold, you know, all of these things? How are you guys thinking about, you know, what size company ends up coming onto your exchange, just so that you avoid, you know, people that are trying to fund an idea, quote unquote?
Yes. No, look, it's a very valid point. And I think it's a point that, you know, we often debate around, because I'm on the other side of that, where, you know, I've heard incredible ideas. I've heard people with amazing concepts and I'm telling you, they could be million-dollar ideas. And I sit at the table with these people and I feel so sorry for them, because, you know, there's just not enough people around them that believe in their idea, because they are the jockey and there's no one backing them, right? So I would love to list every business, but it's not going to be possible. We know that. There is definitely going to be a commercial threshold of an affordability rate, right? If it's not a VC, if it's not a startup, and it's a business that wants to do direct listing, commercially, you've got to be able to have some asset or some value to list. It needs to be something that people want. And I think one of the ideas that we've had, and we've actually tested with reality. So everything we talk about, we've done it with reality. We know if it works or doesn't work, and we've known in the past if it didn't work and if it did work. So we've got ourselves as the test bed, right? And one of the things we definitely going to do is we're going to say to people, look, you know, here's the listing requirement. Want to keep it down to like 7-8 pages. The JC came out the other day and said, no, we've got a new listing requirement for small businesses, and I think it's 47 pages. So, you know, we definitely want something that someone can read in a single day to understand. And once you come into that environment, commercially, there's costs. there are. I mean, you know, you have to appoint a director. We have to do a due diligence on the business. You know, we've got to understand the business. We've got to get an assessment done on the business to make sure it is a commercially sound business, because I'm not going to go list a business that's insolvent just for the sake of that person saving their own bacon. That's not what we're in here. We're in the game of listing good businesses to make them great businesses, right? That's what it's about. And so there will definitely be a listing requirement. There will definitely be a threshold. And if the business doesn't meet that threshold, well, then they're going to have to either come to us with a capital idea to say, look, we'll raise the capital until we meet that threshold, and we'll give them a grading for that. Okay. However, we also, on like the VC side, if they send us an idea, we love the idea. I mean, we're all a group of, I would like to say, wild entrepreneurs that always love good ideas. So if we like the idea, we will go back that idea as reality. We'll help them list the idea, and we'll take an equity inside of that business to help them with that. Because remember, we're an investment company. That's what we're there to do. We're there to gain returns. We're not just there to list businesses, right? So that's kind of what we envision happening. The other thing that we're busy with now, we're hoping to launch in the next week or two, is we took a lot of our investors and the people that are involved in our community that backed our project, and they most of them are very well-known entrepreneurs. And we said to them, how do we create a community where we help entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs? You know, how do we mentor people? So we're putting a mentorship program together now. Initially, it's very simple. The profile of the person, who the person is, and they will share their stories. They've got a blog post. They can write about who they are, what they are. This is their experiences. So every month they'll give us a piece that gives a little bit of who they are, what they are, and on a personal level to explain their journey. And so some of these guys are in the motor industry. Some of these guys are in insurance. And we've got someone in the marine game, you know, sell high-end yachts and boats and all sorts of things. So we've got a very diverse a range of people involved as our community, and they're respected and they're well-known. And so we're gonna open these people up and let the people that are involved in the reality have a community of mentors that they can learn from, mentors that, you know, they can reach out to. And so this is kind of the bigger picture, right? About, it's not just the listing environment. It's not just the business. It's how do we join all these little facets together to create a community of entrepreneurs, a community of investors, where we all work together for like a common objective and a common goal.
All right. So that brings us to the end, you know, of this fascinating discussion just around how reality companies looking, you know, to upend the idea of what it means to list a business and public ownership in a company using the blockchain. And also, you know, how continuing this debate around funding in South Africa, particularly around small businesses. For me, my interest always tends to be around startups, because I feel like startups, technology startups in particular, need way more funding for the most developed economy on the continent. South Africa should be taking in way more startup funding than they do, you know, currently at the moment. $5 billion in 2021 in startup funding that came to the continent, you know, as compared to over $160 billion, you know, in the United States, and only 16% of that $5 billion coming to South African startups. And in a lot of cases, because some of these companies, the likes of Yoko, the likes of Jumo, the likes of Go One, you know, all of these companies having an international edge or advantage to them, you know, how do we help, you know, some of the companies that don't have that, you know, to access some of the funding, particularly when you're in that scaling stage, that tends to be a huge burden for a lot of founders out there. So, you know, hoping that this is going to be a solution, you know, that actually brings, you know, some of those tangible benefits to the market. So that's been it. We were talking to Edward Cottrell, who is a founder and CEO over at Reality Company. Edward, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Great conversation, in a very interesting idea, and waiting to see how this one transpires over time. Like I said, you know, the issue of funding your startups, your small businesses, it's a big issue. And, you know, obviously for a solution like this to come to the market, it's likely going to first be your more technology aligned type of companies that will likely be the early adopters before, you know, some of the other industries. So, you know, hoping that, you know, they do execute, because like I said, the idea, great, but execution is definitely going to be key going forward. All the time we have new ideas, and some of these new ideas, who knows, this might be the idea that helps to, you know, upend. That's a word that we used earlier on, the idea of public ownership, you know, some of these companies. There's already a big debate around the JSC and the place of the JSC to house, you know, some of these fast-growing technology companies and the like. All of these proposals and people starting exchanges in Cape Town, all of that. So clearly there's a need in the market. People are seeing this problem. But going forward, who's going to win the race? Is there a race, or are people going to have maybe a unified approach where all of these different types of exchanges all succeed because of whatever niche offering they're able to offer to the market? To be good, you know, once a couple of businesses, you know, list going forward, maybe get some case studies just to see, you know, what type of businesses, you know, do come in, and how things do develop going forward. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.